This week on Out of the Air features Michigan City's Theater on Skates Academy founder Michael Orr, also discussing his professional figure skating career. Next, singer-songwriter Robert Diebel sharing his seventh album, The Space Between Us, to be released February 2026. Our spotlights on the Center for Creative Solutions 17th World Creativity Week, April 15th through the 21st, including the 10th Annual Poetry Showcase.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight, celebrating the World Creativity Week, which is going to be April 15th to the 21st. It's the 17th season. And in that is, of course, the great poetry thing, which is in its 10th season. That'll be on April 19th. We'll talk more about that. It's Cynthia Hedge, and she's a founder of Center for Creative Solutions. And, of course, Esther's been intimately involved in that, so I'm going to let her kind of take the ball on this and carry it up. Welcome, Cindy Deck, to Art on the Air Spotlight. And, Esther, take it away.
So, Cindy, if you can kind of, and I know, you know, we talk about this every year, but if you could talk a bit about World Creativity and Innovation Week and all the things that the Center for Creative Solutions provides during that time.
Well, thank you. World Creativity Innovation Week, as its name suggests, is an international celebration. And here in Northwest Indiana, the Center for Creative Solutions has organized a celebration throughout that week, and actually throughout April, we're sponsoring or involved with events that are going out throughout the Northwest Indiana region to celebrate the creativity innovation that's going on everywhere in our community. So we're real excited to be returning, and we're real excited because this is also a big year for our poetry showcase. This is the 10th year that we've been doing this, and every year it gets a little bit better, and it's a lot of fun. And so today we're hoping not only to tell people a little bit about Creativity and Innovation Week, but encourage all those poets out there in Northwest Indiana to think about submitting a poem for the jury showcase.
Right, and that includes all the counties, not just our three: Lake, Porter, and LaPorte.
Absolutely. So it actually involves seven different counties in Northwest Indiana, which are Porter, Lake, Stark, Jasper, Newton, Pulaski, and LaPorte.
I have a quick question. Is what motivated you to found this whole idea? I mean, what was the motivation of saying, I'm going to create Creativity Week and innovation?
Great question. Thank you. So the Center for Creative Solutions was formed to encourage a culture of creativity and innovation in Northwest Indiana. And so we, 17 years ago, joined the international group that had started to celebrate that probably for the last 25 years. Actually, Northwest Indiana was one of the first communities in the world to celebrate the week and then the month. And today, almost every country in the world joins in the celebration. So it has expanded greatly. But as I said, we here in Northwest Indiana were some of the first. And I will tell you what's exciting too is not only is that a fact, but we have a very unique World Creativity Innovation Week in the sense that we have multiple events and activities going on. In many places in the world, they do celebrate somewhere the week and the innovation and creativity that's going on in their local communities, but they may just have one event. So we are not only one of the oldest celebrations, but probably more encompassing as far as trying to engage the whole community.
Yeah, enthusiastic participants.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but do we need to mention that it's for the celebration of Leonardo da Vinci's birthday?
Absolutely. Thank you. So the reason we always start the celebration on April 15th is not because of taxes, but because this is the birthday of Leonardo da Vinci, who we consider one of the most, if not the most creative person in humankind. So that's a very important date and a very important person towards teaching us a lot about creativity. So let's talk about the poetry showcase because I got some important dates here that I'd like to share. Those of you who are interested in submitting a poem, we're encouraging students K through 12 to submit a poem or poems, and as well as adults are invited to participate. And the submission deadline for that is Tuesday, March the 31st at 12 p.m. For more information, anyone can go to our website, which is the Center for Creative Solutions.com. And you can submit the your poem if you wish, several different ways. One, there will be a portal to do that on the website, as well as you can submit that by emailing us at thenestmichigancity@gmail.com, or you can email us at creativity52@comcast.net.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate that you're sharing that. That's a World Creativity Week, and it's April 15th through 21st. And the website is the Center for CreativeSolutions.com. And of course, the poetry, which is the 10th annual, is April 19th. And hope everyone can submit their work by March 31st, I believe was the date. Cynthia, thank you so much for coming to On Their Spotlight. And of course, this is Esther's point too. And appreciate you sharing this wonderful celebration of Leonardo da Vinci and creativity.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Cindy.
And a spotlight extra. Artist applications for Hyde Park's 57th Street Art Fair, the oldest juried art fair in the country, is running June 6th and 7th, are available at 57thstreetartfair.org. Artist applications must be received by January 15th. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Ember Forge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Emily Yanez, Executive Director for the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Michael Orr to Art on the Air. Michael is a dedicated figure ice skater with over four decades of experience, five-time U.S. Figure Skating Championships national competitor, a seven-time U.S. Figure Skating Championships sectional competitor, five-time U.S. Figure Skating Championships regional competitor, a 1988 Novice Men's U.S. Regional Champion. The list is much longer of his accomplishments. He is also the founder and director of Figure Skating Theater on Skates Academy. Michael Orr Productions is a small business management company specializing in the performing arts. They offer synthetic ice skating. Theater on Skates Academy offers a unique interactive program combining acting, singing, and skating skills for all ages. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Michael. It's so nice seeing you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Esther. And thank you for having me here. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be a part of the program.
Well, Michael, we always want our guests to tell their origin story. You know, our audience likes to hear that, like how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Michael.
Well, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. Of course, I was born in 1970. 70s was, you know, a little different times right over that, the 1969 riots in Detroit. So my mother, I guess, when she was pregnant with me, she was skating, you know, in a little place in Detroit, not have an idea where it was, but I guess I was born to be a figure skater. So I kind of saw, you know, they were taking us to Disney on Ice every so often, to Joe Louis Arena downtown, you know, every Disney on Ice goes places, you know, and everywhere you go, they take the kids. So I got inspired by watching Dorothy Hamill doing a little sit spin, and she went down and came all the way back up, and it looked like a spinning top. That just intrigued me so much. So
wasn't it the Hamill Camel, right?
No, just a regular spin. Her Hamill Camel, arabesque, you know, and flipping over and doing these kind of things. It's a little bit different. It was just the fact that she did a spin as she was sitting down, and as she rose up and did a scratch spin. It's a little bit more technical, you know, information, but it was really intriguing and it really caught me, you know, at that point. So I wanted to start learning how to skate. Of course, you know, being in Detroit, you know, and being in a inner city community, my family just said, you can't do this. You know, there's no way it's possible. For one, it's a white man's sport. Two, it's a rich man's sport. We don't have the funds. We can never do something like that. Okay, so I went outside, you know, went in the wintertime, went in my shoes, found a patch of ice in the corner, and started trying to do the same tricks that I saw them doing out there. Fell flat on my face, busted my teeth a little bit, you know, wasn't really a pleasure thing. So I decided, okay, I have to figure out where I'm going to learn. So there was an ice rink, you know, at the Fairlane Ice Skating Rink Mall in Dearborn, Michigan, and I just kind of found out about it because I took some with a paper boy. So one of my neighbors had told me I should go to the mall and start learning how to skate. So I did. You know, I just caught the bus, you know, found out. This is when I was about, 11 and a half, 12 years old when this started. And I just started taking the bus and wanted to go out there. You know, at that time, kids, when you're younger, it didn't make a difference so much as far as safety is concerned. You know, yes, it was safe. You know, you had to be careful with kids and everything going on their own at 11 years old. But yeah, hey, 11 years old, I got on the bus, took the bus all the way to the mall, you know, got up about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and started going to Dearborn Ice Skating Rink, you know. So met some people there that told me like how I was just a natural talent. I just never taking lessons, never got on the ice with skates on before, just went rented a pair of skates and I just took off. Everybody where there was just, they couldn't believe, who is this kid? What is he doing? You know, how long has he been here? You know, what's going on? Because everybody knows everyone. So I started that way. And one thing took off, you know, one step at a time, you know, and eventually later down the line, someone picked me up. And well, as far as coaching and managers, and it just took off. So from that point, I, you know, entered my first regional championships, you know, at 13 years old, which was about 2.5 years later. Didn't win really, but I got third. I think I got third or fourth, you know, my first regionals. And then, you know, just kept plugging along the system, got injured by the time I was 15. So to make a long story short, you know, I got to regionals again by the time I was 18 years old, because there was a long other history stories that in there that led me to that point. But I decided that, okay, this is what it was. I love ice skating. I've been involved in it. So once I turned 18, won regionals, got to my national championships, then I started really traveling a lot more, you know, and from there, it just led me to Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. I became emancipated when I was 16, you know, because of course I had to try to get the training that was necessary.
Right.
So met my sponsors, managers at the same time, they just kind of tried to get me out of Detroit so I can go to the suburbs and start training. And it just took off from there. So I was really fortunate that I got picked up because of the talent that I had. So, you know, being a teenager and a young adult, you really don't know much. You know, you just follow the lead of how parents or how people want to, where they want you to go. Couldn't really make it further. Finances started coming really difficult, and you need the moral support, financial support, and the fan support. You need so much in order to make that level. So again, how did I get there? Based on my talent and being one of the very few African Americans that were out there that was leading to being Olympic hopeful. I was on, you know, the media, Channel 2, 4, and 7 back in Detroit, okay, as an Olympic hopeful. They put me up there. So wonderful. Then once I turned 18, 19, yeah, just like every other teenager who's 18, 19, don't have it. They think they know the world. They have all the answers. And like, oh, I'm an adult. I'm going to do my own thing. Not really. But I decided I'm just going to break free from the realm of being in control by others, you know, my coaches or parents or adults. Okay, I tried to do my own thing. So I went down to Florida, you know, just traveling and doing my own thing. And then from Florida, went and ended up to California. And this was basically back in 1990, 1991. Where the U.S. figure skating had decided, you know, a lot of changes were going on, that the school figures for ice skating was no longer going to be necessary. So they eliminated the school figures, and I decided, okay, great. You know, I don't have to do that. Just continue doing free skating. Then they also, at the same year, they decided they wanted to eliminate, you know, the amateur, or change the status quo of amateurs versus professional skaters. What was the difference? In order to be a professional skater, you only accept money. That was it. As soon as you accept a dollar or whatever funds, you know, you're considered to be a professional skater. So now they made it, because it became very difficult for everybody in this community or skating world to continue paying for the training that's necessary. So once they decided they were going to, you know, now allow skaters to accept sponsorships or finances from the community or from people and still keep their amateur status. They can still go to regionals, all the qualifying competitions, nationals, worlds, and even Olympics. Because at that time too, even in the Olympics, you could not wear the sponsorship letterhead during competition, even in practices. It was really, they prevented it. So when they decided to do that, I decided, okay, great. I'm going to start teaching ice skating now. We can start teaching classes, you know, to the younger ones. But how am I going to start teaching? I don't have a national title. Yes, I've been to nationals, you know, and I didn't win nationals. I'm a regional champion, but that's it. So who's going to want to take lessons with me? You know, not knowing they're beginner basic skaters, you know, from the start, falling down, getting back up. Never thought about that. It was just because I'm at such an elite level. So I decided, a friend of mine I met in California, he was from Mexico, the country. So this all leads me to go to Mexico. There's no ice skating there. Hey, perfect opportunity. I can kind of start my coaching career in Mexico. So I just bust myself over to Mexico and started teaching classes there. So 1 month turned into 2 months, 2 months turned into 4 months. And then all of a sudden, 3 years later, I became a coach in Mexico, teaching the Olympic skaters, you know, so it was like wonderful. So it was kind of nice little experience. I did get, you know, hooked on to wanting to stay there and even becoming a Mexican citizen, you know, because they were saying, hey, you're so great. Why don't you become a Mexican? You can represent the Olympics now. My easy target, my ticket to get right there. Didn't really happen. I, again, being a youngster, you know, just turned 21, you think you know the world, didn't have the right answers, didn't know what to do, you know. And so I decided I was going to come back to the United States and start my coaching career there. It led me back to Detroit because my first coach, which was Tom Caribardi from Dearborn, Michigan, he had started a program, you know, in Detroit at the Jack Adams Ice Arena, and where I kind of started learning skating back and forth when, you know, when I was 13 years old. he created the program Renaissance Figure Skaters Club. And when I, by the time I was like in Mexico, coming back to the United States, one of his students, which was the principal of Cass Tech High School, you know, which was a very prominent high school in Detroit, Michigan as well. It was an adult skater. He has said they're looking for someone to be the director of the program, you know, because it was the only African-American figure skating program in the country, period, that had as many skaters there. And they said, I will be the perfect person because I was skating there. My coach has started there. Perfect person to come and take over and be the director. They need someone like me. So I did that, came in, and that started my whole director position. So my first, after, you know, coaching and being in Mexico teaching, yes, my first directorship position was that Renaissance Figure Skaters Club. Wow. In Detroit.
I mean, like, if anybody has, I mean, you have such a beautiful presence on the ice, even as that novice skater, you know, and so to watch, like, for me, to watch your progression from, like, the, what was it, the 1994 Nationals, where you had that little bit of a slip and you so gracefully recovered from that and went on to do a really strong program. So you look at that and then you look at one a couple years later and that showmanship, which the technical stuff was there in 94 during that thing. Technical stuff was like, was on, but there was still, you know, that youth that doesn't have full, I don't know, that doesn't have that theatrical aspect yet. And then you fast forward 2 years later, maybe, and it's like looking, it's just like such a beautiful transformation. So what transpired between those two moments, like you in the gold lamé suit and you at those Nationals?
Well, okay, I'm kind of glad you brought that up. Thank you very much. Because in 1994, well, I guess to say we've taken 2 year periods, 92 to 94, then 94 to 96. So from 1992 to 1994, there was a period that I wanted to give up skating. I just said, okay, I want to quit. I don't even know where. I can't afford it. I don't know what's happening. What's going on? Yes, everybody loves me. They said, oh, Mike Lohr, he's great. I had a great fan base. I'm known around the world. So to me, yes, in our community, I'm famous, you know, because everybody knows who I am. Even Michelle Kwan, Debbie Thomas, all these skaters were all competitors and we're skating together. So I was at that moment of, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. So I wanted to have one last opportunity to say, can I really skate? Am I really that good? So I came back and skated the regionals just so I can try to qualify. And everyone was like, oh, wow, you're back. You know, so, okay, I got fourth, which you had to qualify. You had to take the top four to go to sectionals. So then at that point, I told my coach at that time, you know, yeah, should I go? Should I not go? Then I went back to Mexico. And I got phone calls from the U.S. figure skating and the clubs. It's like, why aren't you out here? You know, you're supposed to be, don't miss this opportunity. This is an opportunity in a lifetime. They wanted me to continue. So just like Bob Paul, you know, who worked for Disney, you know, the manager, director and everything for Disney, they were trying to contact me and say, hey, you need to come and join us for Disney, which is a whole nother story, you know, in itself with my coach. But then when they told me that, I decided, let me go ahead and go. And I found out if I do qualify, then that means my original bucket list goal since I was a kid to always want to skate at the Joe Louis or, you know, Joe Louis Arena in Detroit in the Cobo Hall, you know, to Joe Louis Arena, the Red Wings hockey team. So I decided to, you know, try it out and I got fourth again. Great. Wonderful. So I qualified to go to Nationals. I was going to reach my goal. So at that point, 1994, which was where Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan had the little episode where figure skating had changed this whole popularity status even more so because of that, I qualified to go ahead and compete in that competition. It was, again, same thing. Skating itself is an art. It's a grace. It's elegant. But there's something about it, it's just more athletic, more so than the artistry side of it. And so now from 1994 in 1996, when I decided to kind of be more of a coach and a director of skating, it was like, what am I giving back to the community? Yes, we have to learn how to teach everyone how to skate, but at the same time, the artistry is extremely important. So therefore, now I'm starting to direct to kids of learning how to skate from the beginning stages and show them more the theatrical side of it. So when I got in Detroit, this is where that whole artistry started to kick in more. I can show more of who I am and let loose and become a performer. Yeah, there's ice shows every year, every time you go around. Even though we look at competitive skaters, they still skate in an ice rink and get like champions on ice or discover stars on ice at the time. And they're performing in shows, but they're still being more technical, you know? And so now it's something else. Now, my whole Theater on Skates Academy, which generated later down the line as we started to go, it's more like take it in the next direction. Keep going further into it. Because Theater on Ice from the United States Figure Skating Association didn't come up until several years later where they came up with Theater on Ice. And I changed the name for our organization, for me, for my company, to be Theater on Skates Academy, which we're a nonprofit organization so that we can really turn back and help everyone, you know, really become more performers. Because every skater usually decides to say at the age of, well, 9, 10, or 11, or preteens, they're really working hard at the earlier in days, start working towards, I can't get my axel jump, the famous axel. It's hard for me to get that axel jump and trying to do these double jumps. It's too difficult. I'm falling. Nah, nah, nah. All right, I quit. I don't want to do skating anymore. So we're losing skaters for that. So they created the whole synchronized and precision skating. They try to make it even, okay, we got to keep these kids in there. They don't have to really worry about jumps and spins, you know, just be a part of a team. Hey, great. You know, now we're losing the skaters for that. That's another situation. But then now they changed. It's like, well, they're still liking something about skating because they do like the jumps and spins. So US Figure Skating created the whole Theater on Ice production companies, which was wonderful, good little avenue. So there's so many different avenues in skating now. So where does Theater on Skates come into play? We registered our company, well, to start teaching the skaters to be a part of a team. But again, it becomes more competitive. So that's why I decided, like, it's hard. It is difficult to see skaters from a young age, such as 4 and 5 years old, to actually get disappointed with themselves, feel like their self-worth is no longer valid because they didn't get that gold medal. They felt like someone's better than them. Well, it doesn't matter if someone's doing something better than you, but they're not better than you. You know, they have some things that they can do that you can't, but you have things that you can do. So now what we need to do is create the whole Theater on Skates Academy, which is more of like everybody's great at what they can do and just let's have fun with it. So that's why Theater on Skates Academy became more of the theatrical side of skating.
Well, it's really nice because then the younger ones can aspire to what the older ones are doing so they can keep reaching without that, you know, medal system, I guess. It's more of a I want to learn. But oh gosh, there's just like so much I want to talk about. I want to jump back into your skating career just for a second, and then we'll jump back to your academy. So, and this is just something I've always been curious about. So when you're skating in a competition and all the cheering and applause are happening, do you register that or are you in a totally different space?
You learn to become in your own space if you're going to be a great competitor. And even a performer, it has nothing to do about competing or anything. It's as long as you learn a discipline, like you're taking exams for school. You know, everything that you do is about getting in your own space, staying in the zone, focusing. And that's one thing that performing arts always helps an individual, you know, learn how to become really focused and get in that zone. You know, where most people are afraid of taking exams in schools. It's like, okay, the performing artist, if you learn how to skate, you learn to dance, you learn tennis, you learn football, you're going to be more disciplined to like stay focused. So it's you are in your own space and everything, you just tune everything out. And even today, if I'm skating or performing, I have to learn how to tune everything out, you know, just to enjoy that space of what I'm working on.
Now, at the academy, you use synthetic ice. And I just want to curious, how does that differ from actual real ice? Or is there really much of a difference in doing that?
There's only about a 10% reduction of, you know, friction of glide. You know, after 10 to 15 minutes of skating, you won't know the difference. I mean, and I've done this now for about 2 decades, you know, well, a decade and a half, let's say 2 decades of skating on synthetic ice. I kind of prefer the synthetic ice now more than, you know, this natural ice. And a lot of the students and skaters that have skated with me, they have also learned to love the synthetic ice more so than the real natural ice. It's safer, it's softer, you know, and it just gives you more an opportunity to do some of the things that you won't be able to do on natural ice right away immediately. So most skaters that come out there have never skated before. A lot of the adults, even yourself, you know, or Esther, when they get out here, it's just going to be like, oh, I never thought. Everyone who comes to my program, the first thing they learn how to do, of course, is fall down for safety. As soon as they get on the ice, they're like, oh, well, wait a second. I'm actually skating. And they're putting on a production, a little mini routine right away. So the glide, like I said, is only a 10% reduction of how much you can actually glide across the ice. But again, it depends on the sharpenings of the blades and the skates, you know, get them all the right, you know, hollow grounds. But it's pretty much the same.
So walk us into, somebody walks into your academy, what's going to happen?
First, they're going to say, they're going to like, wow, what's going on? This is so unique. This is so neat. But then as soon as I'm like explaining to them, hey, come on, skate with us. They're going to come out there. We're going to put the skates on, get them out there, teach them how to fall down, get back up off the ice. Well, without stepping on the ice first, you know, we're going to do that on the floor and then have them marching, you know, have them just kind of get comfortable with being in the skates, finding their balance, because we want to make sure that the skates are properly fit and they're going to be able to just be okay once they get out here. Once they do that, we have them step on the ice and repeat the falling down process just to get a mind over matter, you know, feeling that it's okay. You know, it's more of just a, because 90% of physicality can be, well, 90% of it is all mental. 10% is only the physical aspect, you know, that you can't do something. And that's with any type of sport. Once you get past that 90% mental aspect of that fear, you're good to go. So when they get out here, they're going to learn how to balance, learn how to fall down. We'll fall down first, learn how to balance, march across the ice. And then after 10 to 15 minutes, they're going to be skating and gliding like they've been doing it for a while. Then after that point, within that 45 minutes time that we allow every walk-in skaters to come in, they're going to put like a little routine together, you know, for the first time. So they can say that, hey, I've skated on this, like a Disney show, or I've skated on the theater show. I'm like, America's Got Talent. Maybe I should go register with America's Got Talent right away. So they can do that.
In our final moments here, Michael, please tell us how people can find out about it, like on the web and everything, like, and of course, any events coming up from, this is going to be middle January onward.
And where you're located.
Yes. Well, we're located at the Lighthouse Place Premium Outlet here in Michigan City, Indiana. And the address is 1001 Lighthouse Place, Michigan City, Indiana, 46360. They can actually call us at 219-255-8666. Our web address is theateronskates.com. That's theateronskates.com.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Air and sharing this in Michigan City. That's Michael Orr, Theater on Skates Academy in Michigan City. It's a non-for-profit organization dedicated to teaching young people and not so young people to skate. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Great. Thank you, Larry, very much. And thank you, Esther. Have a wonderful, blessed day.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing this to Michigan City. It's been a fabulous conversation. Thank you, Michael.
Of course.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. And Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Robert Diebel to Art on the Air. Robert is a singer-songwriter and is releasing his seventh album, The Space Between Us, on February 6th of 2026. The single, The Forest from the Tree, is out now. His songwriting style has been described as literary folk pop, as he writes in a timeless, poetic fashion, using literary themes that remain culturally current. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Robert. It's very nice meeting you.
Thank you, Larry and Esther. It's nice to be here.
Well, we like having you on our show. And our guests and our audience always wants to know about our guests, their origin story. I always put it like how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Robert.
Well, I first started writing music at the tail end of college, and following college, I started really taking it pretty seriously and became really involved in the music community in Long Beach, California, in all the little bars and clubs and coffee houses, and put together a small band of a cellist, a stand-up bassist, and a percussionist. I played guitar, and we played throughout the LA region, and that was our first record, and then I just kept going from there.
So, but what about, what did you enjoy, elementary, high school, those times? What were you interested in? Did you gravitate toward music then? Was your household musical?
My mother played piano a little bit, but it wasn't, I don't think we would call her, I wouldn't consider it a very artistic family, but nonetheless, she did want us to learn a little bit of piano. And then as a little kid, I remember stumbling into watching Yellow Submarine on television. And I was really taken in by that. I was taken in both by just the pop art, the visualization of everything, and the sound of the harmonies, and probably the sound of a Rickenbacker going through a Vox amp. But also I was really taken by sort of the caricature of Ringo, and I thought he was just really neat as a person. And so I wanted to play drums after that.
And did you?
I did. And so in junior high school, I started really playing drums and started to take it pretty seriously, and did that throughout high school as well, and then started to major as a percussionist in college. But I got disillusioned with the just kind of the academic aspect of a music degree, and did not finish. And that's when I started writing. I think that's what I was disillusioned by, is that we were just having to learn a bunch of stuff that didn't feel
integrated, really
meaningful to me. Yeah. So I started writing, and I put the drums down at that point. I still play drums from time to time with friends that are songwriters, but I discovered that there were a lot of other drummers around that time that were much more proficient than I was. And so I do love, all my records have a lot of really interesting drummers and percussionists on them, but probably because I love that so much. But I started writing on guitar at that point, and I had never really played guitar. So that was a completely foreign instrument that I began to learn, and I learned it without kind of a formality. I just wanted it to always be exciting and interesting, and not necessarily learn it academically, but just artistically.
Well, you mentioned that band, like college time. Did you ever go out just with you and your guitar, or have you always had the band backing you up?
Yeah, so I kind of started as a singer-songwriter and then gradually kind of morphed into getting people to come alongside me. And even when I would travel, I traveled to South Africa after college and was involved in a social justice sort of ministry. And I always took my guitar with me, and I always had it with me. And I loved listening to different folk artists, people like Suzanne Vega and that kind of stuff, that had a really introspective way of writing music. And so that kind of just became my thing. And so then when the band thing happened, it was really more of like, what could I do that would be really different in the early 90s? And the idea of having strings, odd percussion, was just kind of not a thing. So I said, I'll do that. And it kind of started a little bit of what became a bit of a signature sound for me.
What was that first album?
It was called Days Like These. And that was actually the name of the band. But when we put the first record out, by the time we put out the first record, which was self-published, band said, had been with me quite a while, and they were like, you know, I think you're gonna want to go further than we are, so maybe put your name on this just to be on the safe side. And so I kind of started identifying as under my name at that point. And
that's quite generous of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm still in touch with a lot of them. Just actually my old bassist from Days Like These showed up at a gig that I played in LA or the Orange County area. And it was so good to see him. It was just really, really fun.
Well, we kind of want to move to your, this is your seventh album, The Space Between Us, mm-hmm. It's going to be released, and you've already released The Forest from the Tree. Talk us a little bit about that song, and we'll take a listen to it.
You know, it was inspired by the book The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Wollenberger. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name correctly, but it was
a great book.
It's a great book mm-hmm. that I remember hearing about a lot on NPR and things like that, and I just accidentally discovered it. My wife's a school teacher, and she had gotten the book for one of her courses. And I saw it on the coffee table, started reading it. And it just reminded me of all the things that I love about community, but within nature. And so the song is really taking the metaphor of a forest as a community, and in particular a musical community that I'm just so grateful for a lot of the people I'm able to play with. And they grow me in so many different ways.
Well, let's take a listen to that. The Space Between Us is the album. The song is The Forest from the Tree, Robert Riebel.
Blessed ties that bind us. voice from the tree, like the forest 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 from
And that was The Forest from the Tree with our guest today, Robert Riemel. And The Space Between Us is the album coming out in February.
Yep. Robert, who did the cover for that album?
So the photo was shot by a dear friend of mine in the Netherlands, Isaac Slack. And I had actually seen a larger crop of that photo on social media. He's been a longtime fan of mine, and we've corresponded back and forth in different ways. And as I gradually began to realize the kind of what the theme of this record was, I kept going back to that image, and I reached out to him and said, you know, how would you feel about using this for my album? And he loved it. So yeah, that's kind of how that emerged.
Yeah, well, it does fit perfectly with it.
It does.
Yeah. Now, in your songwriting, do you do any collaboration, in terms of the actual songwriting process, or is that all you?
Yeah, I think that while it's not as bandish as some artists are, I give a lot of space to the people that come alongside me. This usually happens, the most of this really happens when we get into recording an album and whatever players are playing on that album. But in this case, I had a string section that I worked very, very closely with to create a lot of these strings scores. And then my producer, Rich Hordinsky, was primarily writing a lot of those scores. And we would take them in, work with them, make some notes as to what we felt worked best and what might needed to be changed. And then we would bring it back to Rich. And then we would kind of collaborate back and forth until everything kind of congealed in a way that felt like it was truly us. So Rich was kind of my, you know, my Brian Wilson or my George Martin, if you will, behind the scenes. And I had been doing that with him long before we started recording the album. So probably about 4 years, Rich and I were passing ideas back and forth on these string arrangements, give them to my team. They would play it out. We'd make some notes, take certain parts out, ask for some different things. And that's how that went.
Well, as we're talking about the song, our next song that we would like to listen to is Orphan Song. Can you give us some background on that?
Yeah, Orphan Song is about A.P. Carter and Sarah Carter from the Carter family. Mm-hmm. And as many of your listeners probably know, you know, A.P. Carter is credited for chronicling a lot of folk songs in America. And this was inspired particularly from a graphic novel about his relationship with Sarah called Don't Forget This Song. And it was illustrated by a dear friend of mine, David Lasky. And in the book, he really focuses on this love story that starts with an apple tree, because A.P. Carter was an apple salesman. But it eventually becomes, as they fall in love and start playing music, it becomes challenging because Sarah wants to have a wider focus with her family and the kids, and AP is still very myopically focused on his art. And I found that to be a little uncomfortably familiar from time to time. So, you know, it's one of these places that I think artists struggle with. So I kind of love this story because it's a little bit of a gentle reminder of keeping balance, you know, in all things.
So. Well, let's take a listen. Orphan Song from The Space Between Us, Robert Dweeple.
Blue apple tree planted by the front door, down they linger. Pleasant, don't you leave me for another song. We've got little mouths to feed and our hearts are on the run. If you stay with me, you know I'll sing along. Oh, pleasant, don't you leave me for another orphan song. Branches of this tree, with all the fruits of our labor. Could you follow me into the harvesting? These songs hang low, sweet and tender. Pleasant, don't you leave me for another song. Little mouths to feed and our hearts are on the run. If you stay with me, you know I'll sing along. Oh, pleasant, don't you leave me for another orphan song.
That was Orphan Song from the album to be released in February, Robert Dweeble. And you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Yeah, that line in it, if you could only speak, what would you say to me? I mean, all of it, you know, like the whole album, and I don't mean this word in the true sense, or the word that I'm going to use in the true sense of the word, but just this, it just has like this this open, desolate feeling to me, like, and not in like the, oh, you know, cry desolate, but there's just so much open space, I guess, maybe reflective space that, and it's, you know, I feel that way with the image too. I mean, like, what's more beautiful than that tree skeleton, but that tree skeleton doesn't have its leaves, you know? So it's just really...
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, I think we're all in a very precarious time, and not to, you know, heighten all of our fears around it, but I think we're all feeling this level of anxiety that, you know, the values that we thought we all shared seem to be really shaken in some ways. And so there is some anxiety around this space that we used to kind of have, I think, more of faith around. And so I think it's just kind of speaking to something that we're living through without necessarily having all the answers for it.
Right.
And hopefully that's a step towards coming together in a way.
In our last few moments here, tell us how people can find you online, release dates and everything.
So I'm a big proponent of physical media. I am on streams, but I don't particularly care for them. The best way to really engage with my work is through either vinyl or CD. And I do that through Bandcamp. And this, although this record will be formally released in February, it is completely available in full form on Bandcamp. And we wanted to do that deliberately because Bandcamp has been so honoring of independent musicians where streaming has not been.
Right.
And so we have released this album in full through them in advance of all of the streaming stuff.
Well, we appreciate coming on Art in the Air and sharing your music and musical journey. Space Between Us comes out in February. You've heard the two songs, Robert Dweeble. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your arts and music journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.